Welcome to the Industrialised podcast, where we speak to those leading the charge towards the future of construction. This week, Darren Richards, Director of Cogent Consulting, speaks to Matt Randall, Director at Mace. In this conversation, Matt talks about scaling industrialised construction in complex projects, showcases Mace's construction to production kit of parts approach, and examines how productivity targets can improve client engagement.
Welcome to the Industrialised podcast, where today I'm joined by Matt Randall from Mace. Hello, Matt.
Good morning, Dan.
Please tell us a little bit about your role, yourself, and your role at Mace, Matt.
Yeah, so I've been with Mace for over 25 years, working through mainly in the aviation and infrastructure sector. I'm now the pre-construction director looking at all of the designs and work winning and tendering parts of the business.
Is that mainly within the UK or solely in the UK?
Solely in the UK. We're working on several airports around the UK and also High Speed 2.
Okay, good. So we'll start with a client angle question. So how is client engagement and expectations evolving to encourage more industrialised methods? And what are the key drivers for adopting off-site construction from a client perspective?
So the client is more and more engaged with industrialised construction. I think the drivers from an airport perspective is more airports expand. They've done all the easy expansions where you can expand on a landside site. So now the expansion is evolving right in the heart of the airport or the restricted zone. So the impact to construction and the operation, the impact by working in a regulatory environment, means that industrialised construction is more and more appealing because you're reducing the amount of transport, you're reducing the waste, you're reducing the number of operatives that need to go airside and work in the area. And then there's the other more tangible benefits like faster, more program certainty, safer for our people, higher quality and lower carbon.
And an intelligent client appreciates all of that, I'm sure. So how does that translate or get interpreted into the brief when you're sitting down with the architects and the engineers? Does the client have a lot of involvement at that point, or is that where Mace really grabs hold of the opportunity?
Well, the work that I've been doing with our designers that we've been working with for a number of years on this is more and more engaged. I think it's more engaged than it ever has been. We've been working with Turner & Townsend on an MMC barometer, so you can have an initial assessment on how applicable the project is to an MMC methodology. We've been working with Atkins on an MMC surfacing tool, and we've been working with Mott McDonald's on our MMC assessment tool. So I think everybody is very keen to try and take the mystery out of it and to really apply a process methodology at bringing this online. But I think the consideration is now at the forefront of everybody's mind. Where we're trying to get better is we're linking productivity to MMC. And we're trying to understand the benefits so that we can demonstrate that to a client, which makes the investment decisions and business case benefits more apparent. I think that's the biggest challenge with MMC because it tends to come with a premium and you need to be able to demonstrate the benefits at the investment case to convince clients that this is the right way forward.
Yes, so it's more of a value proposition than it is a cost proposition in that regard.
Well, everyone recognises the cost, but not everyone recognises the value of doing it in this way. But I think when you look at a surfacing tool that says, well, actually, this particular job could take out a stand for 26 weeks or it takes a stand for 1 month, then the revenue stream of that stand comes into play, and that's not always been considered in the past.
And productivity, obviously, is a perennial problem for the construction industry, been flatlined or even probably going south for several years within the wider productivity arena. Difficult to understand why. Some of it, I think, is that we maybe don't measure the right elements of productivity. What type of targets are you looking at, and what's your unit of measure? Is it an operative hour that you're looking at?
So we've been measuring productivity now since about 2017. So we got quite a good benchmark where we measure gross value add for an operative, and it's measured in pounds per operative hour. We're working with Heathrow in a really focused way, and what we're looking at doing is tying into our contractual programs productivity benefits of 3% year-on-year improvement on average productivity per asset type. And we're looking at raising our pre-manufactured value to 50%. So that is off-site builds by 50% rather than by volume. So I think they're two significant targets. We're looking at the next 5 years, and the only way we can deliver that volume of work is to take 50% of the work off-site.
And some of that is obviously to address not just productivity, just the wider labour pool or lack of, and the skills issue that we're facing a crisis on, obviously.
Absolutely. It's getting a skills shortage issue, but also if all of the work is now deep in the heart of the airport, we would have to get every single one of those people passed up so that they could then go into the secure zone, as well as the airport operating as normal. So it just makes total sense taking work off-site rather than trying to bring the workers on-site and struggling to find those workers.
And obviously, if you're going broadly 50% off-site, I think was the figure that you cited, clearly supply chain engagement then becomes a critical process, and how you engage the right suppliers, the ones that have the right balance sheet to be able to grow and deliver with your own business metrics. What are the challenges to overcome within the supply chain and procurement practices in terms of the wider offsite manufacturing sphere?
One of the biggest things we always get is pipeline and visibility of pipeline. So unless the supply chain can see a visible pipeline, they find it very hard to invest in offsite assembly facilities and the tools and training involved in order to set up an offsite facility. However, the ones we found that have come with us on the journey and have invested have done really well. And also the benefits then become the socio-economic benefits. So we have a company down in Wales that are working around the local schools, and they're bringing females in as welders, and they're making a fantastic difference to the local economy. So I think that the other benefit of this way of working, the off-site construction to production, means that you're bringing value right the way around the UK rather than just in the areas where the infrastructure is being developed.
And you mentioned construction to production, C2P, which is a mantra. It's a program that you run. How long has that been running for?
C2P is our bespoke method of off-site or industrialised construction. It's not a new concept. We've been doing this for 20-25 years, working on bringing larger volumes to site and then getting the benefits rather than working directly on the site. We used to focus on large-scale volumetrics. So I don't know whether you remember the Pier 6 bridge over the taxiway at Gatwick. That was a huge volumetric. And similarly, the control tower at Heathrow Airport. You can even go back to 1999, where we built the Millennium Wheel. And all of those were really good examples of C2P. We've now developed this over the last 20 years to a standardised approach of prefabrication and off-site assembly. And we've done that through all of our business units, so that we have a C2P library where the learning and the data capture is collated, so that we have some cross-industry learning where we can share best practice and utilise different examples of industrialised construction. I'll give you an example. We have a factory within our London residential project, which was a project that used a low-carbon concrete cassette as part of their scheme. They reduced their transport by 40%. They had 75% less waste, and they delivered one floor in every 50 hours. So phenomenal achievements. And what we've done is we've taken that low-carbon concrete cassette and we've reused that at Manchester and also at other aviation buildings at Heathrow Airport as well.
And I'm assuming it works both ways. You're in a very pioneering sector, the airport, necessity being the mother of invention. You're working in a very difficult environment, so one would imagine you're innovating and creating new ideas. Does it work the other way? Do the residential team access and utilise some of the airport's innovation?
Yes, we've just recently completed a project in Manchester Airport, which is the Pier 2 Manchester transformation. And within there is the first time we've done the fixed links and nose. The nose are a vertical circulation core that connects the terminal to the aircraft. and we've completed the whole of those. They're not small buildings, they're 15 by 50 metres square and about 50 metres high, about 40% of the floor area of the pier. And we've completed those as a complete kit of parts approach, including fixed links, stair cores, lifts and external panels. So for us, the advantage was we had a very tight enclave site, and then we could utilise all of that work so that we could build the whole thing effectively as a kit of parts in 29 days as opposed to 110 days. Where we've transferred that learning, we've had people from the pharmaceutical part of our business have asked us for fixed links, stair cores, lift shafts, and all that learning is cross-shared between our engines within our organisation.
Do you have working groups within the organisation around industrialised construction specifically? Or?
Yes, we have a C2P forum, and that forum meets regularly once a month, and it's tabled, and we share knowledge and presentations across the business.
Okay, and one would imagine that obviously we're dealing with some pretty complex, fairly large elements of offsite here. So digital tools and data and manipulation of that design information, you know, is going to be really the core here, I think, to success. What have you had to do in terms of software development or working with suppliers to get them to work on the same platforms as you want to work on, etc.? Because integration, interoperability has been a challenge for the industry quite some time, I think, isn't it?
It really has. The software is a massive challenge, actually. We've been working closely with WSP. WSP are using Autodesk platforms, so they've used Inventor, Assemble. One of the platforms that we use and our clients are adopting are Autodesk Construction Cloud, which I think is a really good step in the right direction because everybody's using the same platform at certain airports. I think where we come to the steel suppliers and they use a Tekla or Revit style model, it's quite difficult to transpose models across the different platforms. I think if everybody starts to gravitate towards a common set of digital tools, it's going to be a lot easier to progress the design through the design gateways. But it's a challenge because people come up with ideas so quickly now. It's happening so quickly, and some of these new software programs, particularly from the gaming industry, are absolutely fantastic. So you can't ignore them, and actually is bringing us along as an industry.
Yes, I guess the challenge is, can you implement them fast enough to keep up with the idea generation?
Yes.
Okay. Good. So you work with a number of the major kind of global practices, the Mott's, the Atkins, Turner Townsend, WSP, etc. They're obviously bringing up knowledge and ideas probably on a global basis. So just in terms of benchmarking your activity globally, do you look at other territories around the world that you admire for industrialized construction? I mean, Singapore has had a big government-focused industrialized building program. Do you look at other areas to see where you rank in terms of the stuff you're doing?
We've been doing a lot of work globally. Our consult engine is a global organization. It's interesting. A lot of the external airports and areas using different methodologies. So you've got an airport in Atlanta, which is by WSP, and they are working very large-scale volumetric, and they're building the section of the pier off-site, and then they're bringing them across the airport on SPMTs, self-propelled motorized transport, and taking them through to the final position of the building. You've also got the building in Dubai, and they're using large-scale volumetric approaches. I think where we're coming from, and this is what we're quite pleased with, is that utilising the kit of parts approach on the Manchester fixed links and nodes, but also the control posts at Heathrow Airport, we believe this is a step change, and we don't see many other people doing it. I haven't seen any good examples of anyone else doing it in that kind of approach, and we're certainly getting the benefits of that kind of approach.
I certainly think the Atlanta project has got quite a bit of profile in the UK. I think probably just because of the sheer size of the modules that they're moving. I've noticed that's actually got a bit of traction within the UK newsrooms over the last couple of months in particular. So
there's no doubt about it. They really look impressive, and those machines things going across runways is very dramatic. We just think that it's not as efficient as a kit of parts approach, which is not as dramatic, but it certainly gives you a lot of the same advantages.
No, it's understandable. And, you know, horses for courses, isn't it? You know, whatever your strategy is, you've got to adapt and use the technology that suits your strategy, haven't you?
Yeah.
So if we come on to the benefits then, so you've now got several projects under your belt and obviously had the C2P initiative for a couple of decades now. In terms of tangible benefits, whether that be a measure of productivity or slightly wider activity, what do you see is the biggest benefit on complex projects by adopting the construction to production ethos and therefore off-site? Because we've not touched upon reduced carbon or sustainability benefits. You know, we've kind of focused so far on skills, addressing the labour issue, and obviously dealing with some of the design complexities. So what are the wider benefits that you see around adopting more industrialised construction?
We have a benefits calculator from using MMC, and we focus on the hours that we've taken off site and use that as a measure to reduce the impact to the operation, which I think applies to more than just airports. It applies to other businesses as well. We look at quality in the number of defects at handover, which is definitely reduced because you pick up the defects in the factory in the factory acceptance tests. We picked up the safety, and I'm very proud to say that Manchester was delivered without a riddle or without a riddle accident. So we know that it is a safe way of working, and I think people prefer to work in a factory safe environment rather than on a roof in the middle of winter. We look at the productivity data. I think the productivity link between P&B and productivity is absolutely key, and I think that's going to unlock MMC going forward. So there are seven benefits to MMC, and I think it was picked up by Mark Farmer, and we recognise those and measure those on a quantitative basis. Cost is always a challenge, and we're still at the early stages with our supply chain of letting savings that the suppliers are gaining wash back to the clients. And I think unless we resolve that, that's going to be a really tricky selling point to get our clients to commit to industrialised construction going forward. And then on a more qualitative approach, it's not really the first project that commences with a kit of parts solution which is the one that's going to get the most benefits. It's always the repeatable projects, the second and third. So at Heathrow, we're doing a control post program at the moment. We've delivered our first control post at Heathrow Airport, and we're now building, we've just started the two second and third project, which are using an identical platform kit of parts. So we're using exactly the same kit of parts, but we're now improving on the internal fit out elements of the work. So we're improving the modules, improving the design, and we should get measurable benefits on the second and third. And then we've got a fourth one on the pipeline. So that the certainty of the pipeline that I mentioned earlier suddenly then enables the supply chain to invest and really commit to this way of working. And we're hoping and seeing that the benefits will now wash back to the client as a result of the efficiencies gained through MMC.
And I think, you know, what you've hit upon there, you know, is a perennial problem with traditional construction methods. You know, the amount of times a team assembles, does one project, then basically is dissipated all over the country on other projects. You know, that knowledge is often lost. Teams don't work together on multiple projects, you know, so they don't get any better. The lessons learned are not really looked at in any detail. And, you know, the benefit I think you've described there of having three, four, five similar construction projects for the same client to demonstrate that, you know, this is a process that is continually improving is a key factor, isn't it? You know, to be able to convince that client that actually, whilst cost on your first project is going to be a challenge, by project number three, you know, it'll probably get to neutrality, and by project number five, it's probably a lower cost, higher value product.
Well, we have this concept of aggregation, and if we can aggregate these projects or the standard platforms within these projects, and airports are perfect places for that aggregation because they get on the same plane to go from London to New York. So why get off into a different building that's a complete bespoke design? You may as well get off an exactly the same building or exactly the same set of systems that get you back into the terminal. So I think what we're trying to do on these wider programs within airports is look at standardizing a digital catalogue. And if we can standardize a digital catalogue, which we're well progressing now, to make sure that if a design has been already developed and it is a high level of maturity, then what we're now measuring with our designers is how much the design have you reused and how much is a complete brand new design. So if by measuring that, you can then see an improvement that we're reusing more and more existing digital of the digital catalogue, you then start to almost mandate reuse of the design rather than starting from scratch every single project.
Yes, and the thought process and culture becomes one more akin to a manufacturing business where, you know, the pure definition of design for manufacture and assembly, you know, you're able to get the manufacturing and the design process right in the knowledge that really it's the assembly process that's got to go well on the airport side, isn't it? So culturally you're adopting some different terminology and some different language here as well, aren't you?
There's definitely a cultural shift and this is not something that happens overnight. I mean, these projects take quite a long time to digest, and I think the culture is shifting, and I think everybody's mind is shifting to a design for manufacture approach. I'm quite optimistic about the way ahead, and the other opportunities that it opens up when you start to utilize platforms is you can link in algorithms, you can link in AI, and become more and more efficient with the design process, and hopefully that efficiency will wash out back to the clients and back to make us all more efficient to be able to deliver more for less.
And you know, it's demonstrable within other industries and other sectors, the white goods sector, the automotive sector, the aerospace sector. You know, they've adopted platform designs 25 years ago, and the whole ethos then of lean manufacturing, continuous improvement, you know, is at the heart of their DNA, isn't it? I mean, I think we still talk about it as if it's a little bit of a novelty for construction because it's not mature yet, but there's enough examples in other sectors to show that if you get this right and that whole DFMA lean assembly process with continuous improvement at the back of it, you know, productivity numbers will just increase dramatically, won't they?
Yes, yeah. I have to say, one of the biggest arguments people in construction say is, well, everything we build is a prototype, and you can understand that that's a barrier to the construction industry not progressing as fast as the manufacturing industry. But you know, we index linked productivity figures at £100 per operative hour in 1997, and we're still not far above £100 per operative hour. The guys can only lay a set of blocks in the same way. So you know, we do have challenges. We do have value density is different from manufacturing with the volumes that we build. But I think by focusing on these key platforms and these key areas where we do add value, and then just applying a consistent approach, I think consistency is the key. And then utilizing the designs so that we can do more and more offsite work. We're certainly going to see an improvement, and we're targeting, I think I said before, we're targeting a 3% year-on-year improvement in productivity and linking that direct with a PMV of 50% off-site build by 2027 and moving to the next 5 years.
You mentioned before about encouraging supply chain investment. I mean, clearly, you can only perform if your supply chain performs. What's your approach to intellectual property and to the patenting and use of novel ideas? Do you try and protect that idea? Do you license it to the supply chain so Mace retains ownership of the concept? Or is that very much a collaborative, shared IP that you're working around? What's the culture around that?
It's a good point, actually. The intellectual property of the Manchester Flans, for example, resides with Manchester Airport Limited. It's within their contract. So that project is owned by Manchester Airport Limited. So their next peer, they will be able to choose whether or not they decide to go down the same way and just have repeat nodes. The design and the method of design is by WSP, and their technique is way ahead of some of the competition in the way that they approach it. But the kit apart approach we like to think is ours. So that mindset and the approach and the way to organise ourselves from taking the design, procuring that design from a market that's not quite ready for it yet, I don't think, and then delivering that on site, that certainly is our approach under the bespoke C2P.
Where do you see the biggest challenges within the supply chain then? I mean, is this an MEP services challenge for you in terms of, you know, the amount of businesses that can produce prefabricated mechanical, electrical, plumbing componentry is relatively few, certainly on scale, or is it in other areas of fabrication? Where does the supply chain at the moment feel a little constrained, might be holding back maybe some of your strategy?
I think the MEP market are way ahead of the rest of the construction market. They've been doing this for some time, and I think the interesting thing about the MEP market is that half of the market decided to go down the MMC route and the other half decided not to. And the ones who did decide to invest and go down the MMC route have done better and fared better. Whereas I think the MEP market, I mean, some of the systems that the guys do are absolutely, getting better and better every time. So we're seeing the original pipe racks used to just have pipes within a rack, whereas now they've got the BMS systems all linked in and everything's commissioned in the factory. So everything is coming on. Every generation of new components and sub-assembly that's developed are getting better and better, which is lovely to see, because you can see this is more intelligent, you're adding more value density to the sub-assemblies that you bring in. So I think where we're looking at is, and particularly on the Manchester fixed links and nodes, was bringing that into the lower value densities. So things like connecting the floor slabs, connecting the structural frame to the cladding, and then clipping the cladding frames to the structural floor slabs. Turning the temporary work so that we beefed up the staircases so that they could take the temporary loads, building the buildings inside out. So all of that thinking and the methodology of erection. So it wasn't just the design that was interesting, but it was the fact that the 4D model meant that you had your method absolutely thought out properly. And I'll be showing it later on today, is when we had a virtual method and a virtual model that showed the build sequence. And when you look at the time lapse of the actual final node being constructed, it was exactly the same method that was done with the guys on site. They knew exactly what they were doing, and as a result, when they got to their eighth node, they were really efficient at doing it.
Yeah, and you know, with the digital models as good as they are now, especially the 4D models, you can do a significant dress rehearsal in advance, can't you? You can work through the various what-if scenarios, and you know, you can model that in the event that something doesn't quite go to plan. And you know, I think that's a huge benefit of, you know, the development of the digital space, isn't it? You know, it's not just about design, it's about modelling the program as well.
And it enables everybody to get involved. It means that we can bring the steel suppliers in there and the lifting specialists and say, well, how would you lift this sub-assembly? How do you get it off the back of the lorry horizontally and then lift it vertically? And how do you support it in the temporary case? And they could see it. And once they could see it, they could give us really good learning as to what we were up against and what the kind of challenges that they were facing in order to put these buildings together.
Yeah, it's, you know, part of the challenge with supply chain is inspiring them to raise their game, to innovate, you know, to kind of almost see your vision, which you can obviously model, you know, and hopefully they've got the skill set to be able to say, yeah, we can solve that problem, or that's not a problem, you know, we can deal with that through another route.
It was really interesting. They the first guys were on site, they were on site, they were so cold, they didn't know what they were doing, they just turned up and they said, okay, we need to have a briefing. So we stopped everyone, had a briefing, and they said, okay, we get the concept. By the time they were on the eighth node, they were fully bought in and invested, and it was really good to see that they got it. And they, you know, at the end of it, they were saying, why don't we always build buildings like this? It just makes so much sense, you know. And that was a real heart and minds thing for me, was that we won the hearts of the guys who were actually putting the work up, because it made their life easier.
Yeah.
And I think if it makes their life easier, then they're going to be more productive and they're going to be more satisfied excitement coming to work and doing a great job.
Yes, I think, you know, that motivation of feeling like they're contributing to the innovation process, you know, morale goes up, quality generally goes up. I think there's enough examples of that. It's a win-win, really, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. And they're proud of what they do, and they realise they're doing something special, and they put that extra 10% in, and it makes all the difference to the quality of the end product. And I think you can see that at Manchester Airport. Hopefully when people start flying out of Pier 2, they'll see the quality of the build.
Okay, very good. You touched upon before some of the sustainability outcomes, and obviously waste and carbon reduction is quite a significant driver for a lot of clients within, you know, wider ESG strategies. How are you measuring the carbon impact or the embodied carbon or the benefits of the process that you've just described over the last half an hour or so? Because obviously it's clearly very innovative, it's working, you're getting traction. But you know, a lot of people now are saying, yes, I want it faster, I want it more cost effectively, but I also want loads and lots of sustainability benefits from it. So how are you seeing that at the moment? What outcomes have you seen?
Well, the Construction Leadership Council is quite good in focusing on five key focus areas. And we've been heavily invested in the Construction Leadership Council because Mark Reynolds, our chairman, has been heading up the Construction Leadership Council for some time. But those five areas are, first of all, getting it in the contract and making sure that's back to back with the second tier subcontracts so that they're linked in. We use Clause X29 on NEC4, which is focused on getting sustainability commitments within the contracts. And once it's within the contract, people are committed to achieve them. Then focusing on low carbon, the three big low carbon materials are diesel free sites, which we're on target to do by the end of 2026. We've then got low carbon concrete and low carbon steel. So this is where the low carbon cassettes have come in, and we've taken that learning from the high rise sector, and simply by taking out the crinkly tin or the metal decking composite floors, you're taking 50 kilograms of carbon per meter squared. So we're getting a saving by casting them in off-site onto a steel bed that can be repeated over and over again. So that steel bed is then used for the next pour, and we're reducing carbon from it's reduced down to 43% of an OPC composite metal deck slab, and that's simply by casting it within the factory, giving it the time to cure off-site, and then transporting it to site. The only challenge with trying to balance carbon off is that as soon as you move concrete, you're then adding to the cost of that concrete, and this is where the low value density argument comes in. You really only want to move it once, if at all. If you do move concrete, some people are saying, well, it's better to take the factory to the site and then pour the concrete on the site. So I'm still on the argument of you get a better carbon result if you take the carbon off site and cast that in a warm factory, enable it to cure, and then bring it to site.
Rather than a field factory.
Yes. Yeah. Although we are getting benefits in lower carbon reinforcements and lower carbon comp floor, composite metal decking, and lower carbon concrete using GGBS. So we are able to reduce a normal mix, but it's still not as good as pre-casting concrete off-site.
We've talked about all the positives here, which is very, very impressive, the work you're doing, and it's clearly part of a wider strategy, and you've got an end game here. What's your biggest frustration at the moment? What if you could change something tomorrow to enable your strategy to move quicker, what would it be? Is it a supply chain issue? Is it a client engagement issue? What would your biggest frustration be?
Well, I think it has been a frustration with the maturity of the market and the client being frustrated that they're not getting any of the savings washed back. It's all, I think, cost at the end of the day. Everyone believes that the lowest cost option is providing a lowest cost option, but we're not getting that. So I think this is where I'm really focused on trying to resolve this conundrum, which is about how do we increase the volume of consistent platforms that we need at airports, and then be able to get that aggregation, which is economies of scale, result in lower cost for the clients and also for us. And at the same time, by increasing the productivity so that we're actually producing more on site when we actually get to deliver the work on site. So I think that's my biggest frustration at the moment, is to try and overcome that challenge where MMC is considered to be a more expensive way of building, and we need to overcome that and deliver the projects at the same cost or less than a traditional way of working. I think once we've tipped that needle over the balance, that's when we're really going to see a change in all projects being done in this way.
Yeah, just need clients to stay the course and realise that, you know, it's a longer game, isn't it, this?
I think once it happens, it will be a monumental shift and no one will go back. But we're still not there yet. We're still at the balancing.
Well, Matt, it's been really a pleasure to speak with you today and hear about some of the fantastic work that you're doing at Mace and your views on industrialised construction. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to this edition of the Industrialised Podcast. This podcast was produced by Industrialised Construction Media. The views expressed in this podcast are solely those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of Industrialised Construction Media. If you enjoyed any of the themes discussed, then the Industrialised Construction Journal is the perfect place to hear more from the experts who are dedicated to the advancement of our construction industry. For more information, head to www.industrialisedconstruction.co.uk.